for a couple years now, since about 2008, when everything really started to get pretty crazy out there. So let's just start with a word of prayer, and then we'll get started. Lord, thank you so much for this evening you've given us. I thank you for the time that we have together. I thank you for Pastor Don and his abilities to sing, Lord, and praise you. Lord, be with me as I share my thoughts, and Lord, just I ask that you use this as a blessing to everyone here, and we just pray that we can be more like your son, Jesus, in your son's name, amen. Well, first off, basically, let me tell you what this talk is not. It's not a how-to, like how you should tithe, if you should tithe or you should not tithe. It's not a how-to, like to get out of debt. There's plenty of resources out there that are fantastic. I know, like Dave Ramsey, he's got good stuff. There's plenty of people out there that cover that. What Pastor asked me to do was share some thoughts on how you should do personal finances in a worst case scenario. Okay, like if something horrible happens in the economy. So, a little bio about myself. I have a wonderful wife, Amy. She's back there with. I've been blessed with our newest son, Josh, and Paul. I'm sure you all know he's been running around here for a couple years. I work for Chrysler, it's actually now Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. I don't know if you knew this, but they sold out to the Italians. So I now work for a foreign car company, but it's fantastic. So I am not a certified financial planner. I don't have any licenses. I just wanted to get that on the table. I'm not giving advice. I'm just sharing what I've learned, and I pray that it's a blessing to you. I'm not wealthy yet. I'm not a multimillionaire. I just, like I said, I have some knowledge that I'd like to share. But one thing I have been blessed to have mentors in my life, very successful individuals that have been willing to share their experiences, their knowledge. You know, who you're listening to. You always want to make sure you listen to the right people because there's a lot of noise out there, as we know. I started studying in 2008 when everything really started to get crazy with the housing market. And I thought to myself, something's going on here. I need to educate myself because something is going on. You know, and I was done listening to all the talking heads. So I started looking into it. And let's see here. How many know we live in some interesting times, right? Financially? Yeah. Does anyone remember what happened in 2000 with the tech bubble? You know, .com this, .com that. Everything was a .com. .com plastic bags, you know, whatever. Everyone had a .com. And that, as you know, that popped. What happened after that? Everyone went to real estate, you know. From 2000 to 2008, everyone was buying houses. You know, if you can fog a mirror, they'll give you a 110% loan for a mortgage. You know, and I fell into that. So after the tech bubble, then the housing bubble hit. And there was actually many people that predicted that would happen for years. They were saying, this is going to happen. What did we do to them? We laughed at them. Oh, you're crazy. Everyone's making money. And after it happened, I went back and listened to all these interviews, and they predicted it. And they said this was going to happen. So that made me think, okay, maybe I should really just start listening and looking myself, getting my own information, and not listening to everyone out there. And the crazy times, you know, we turn on the TV or the news, and the stock market's up, and everyone's happy, and then it's down. Oh, Lord, oh, my, whoa. And then it's up, and it's down, and it's up, it's down. I mean, it's constantly going up and down. So financially, and credit card debt is nearing $1 trillion in this country. Student loan debt is nearing $1 trillion of student loan debt. Luckily, I was blessed enough to pay my student loans off some time ago. And I just hear stories of people getting out of school with $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 in student loan debt. And, I mean, that's a mortgage payment. So, there's so much information out there. Things that we have been told in the past might not necessarily be true. How many have heard these type of thing? Housing always goes up in value. You're crazy, man. You get this now, And 3 years from now, you can sell it for $50,000 more. And for a time, that was true. I mean, you could buy a house for $200,000, and the next 2 years, it's worth $300,000. So people, it was great. Stocks are good for the long term. You know, and sometimes that's true if it pays dividends. Debt and borrowing is normal. You know, I mean, you turn on the TV, what do you see? You know, 0% interest, you know, financing. And the system is actually set up for this. What's everyone concerned about? Their credit report. What's my credit score? Oh, I got an 800 credit score. I'm awesome. You know, oh, man, I went through some hard times and my credit score is really low and I can't get a loan anywhere. But so the system is set up. You know, they tell you, oh, well, you need to get a credit card so you can build your credit. You need to get into debt. Mm-hmm. And something didn't really sound right to me about that, but I did it. I did it well, too. You know, go to school, get a safe, secure job, and 30 years you retire. Anyone in the auto industry or has ever been in the auto industry? At 30 and out is gone. It is gone. Times are changing. I mean, I work in the auto industry. It's gone. And I had to change. So let's see here. Let's see if this works. Am I doing this right? Talk amongst yourselves. Yeah. Oh. There we go. Sorry about that. How many have asked this question? What if? What if? That is a very, very powerful question. And it can be positive, extremely positive. When I met my wife for the first time, I'm like, what if I ask her out? And she says yes. So I took that risk, and she did, and here we are. It can also be very negative, and you can beat yourself down. Oh, what if I wouldn't have done that? Oh, what if I wouldn't have bought the condo for a lot more expense? I asked myself all that along for the past couple years, and I finally stopped, but what if I wouldn't have bought this condo? Where would I have been? But it's very damaging. It can be an uplifting or very fearful. But in 2 Timothy 1:7, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind. We should not be fearful. God has given us spiritual resources for every trial we face in our lives. We just need to seek Him in that. Focusing on God allows us to handle our lives with wisdom and confidence, but we need to seek Him. Bible, basic instructions before leaving earth. Everything we need to know is in there. Everything. So no matter what happens, God is in control, and we need to remember that everything that happens comes from Him. So everything we went through for the past couple years, economically and financially, that's nothing new to Him. So trust in the Lord. He is on the throne. Now, having said that, we have an elder, a great man that I respect. His name is Norm Walworth. I used to go to church with him. He used to always say this, just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you throw your brains out the window. You can't put your head in the sand. You have to have a plan. You have to prepare. So trust in the Lord, absolutely. But at the same time, you have to prepare. So when it comes to finances, what would happen if? There's many things that have happened in the past. I mean, over the past 100 years, you hear stories of all the Great Depression, the 60s and 70s, up the oil embargo, whatever. And as you can tell, based on the past couple of years, there's going to be a lot of things in the future. So in the past, a couple of things I just wanted to go over. What would happen if there's a bank run? Who's seen It's a Wonderful Life? I think everyone has. I think my wife forced me to watch that a couple years ago. But what happened in It's a Wonderful Life? Yeah, there was a run in the banks. Okay? And we'll talk about that, you know, what causes that. And then a bank holiday. Usually what follows a bank run is a bank holiday, where the banks are closed for a week, 2 weeks, however long. A power grid failure. Does anyone remember August 14th of 2003? You remember. So I'll cover that. Natural disasters. Last year in Oklahoma, those massive tornadoes that destroyed people's homes. Hurricane Katrina. I mean, that was devastating for the people in New Orleans. We don't have to worry about hurricanes, obviously, but in Goodrich last year, does anyone remember the house that was destroyed? That's 3 miles from my house, and the house was leveled. The tornado came through. So another thing is runaway inflation. Has anyone noticed the prices of items you buy increasing? Oh, everything, yeah. I mean, I remember a day when you could buy a car for cash, you know, and it wouldn't cost you. I think the average, being in the auto industry, the average price of a car, I think, is $28,000 right now. That's staggering to me. So we'll talk about these, and, you know, we'll talk about what's to blame, you know, what causes these and who causes them. So bank runs. On the upper right, banks of entire nation are closed for a brief holiday. Why did they do that? Well, because everybody, as you can see here, wanted their money. So how many people here have heard of fractional reserve banking? Fractional reserve banking. I'm going to read a definition of this. Due to fractional reserve banking, which is the practice whereby a bank retains reserves in an amount equal to only a portion of the amount of its customers' deposits to satisfy potential demands for withdrawals. If a majority of depositors demand their money at once, the banks don't have enough to supply the demand. This will most likely cause a panic as individuals demand their money. For example, if you give the bank $100,000, okay, by law, they only have to keep $10,000 in the bank. They can loan $90,000 out. And from that $90,000, they can loan $81,000 out. And from that $81,000, they can loan $72,000. So from that $100,000 that you deposited into the bank, you just created $1 million. Poof. That's fractional reserve banking. I could go on here it's amazing what's going on in the banking industry right now. It's very, very amazing. 2008. Does everyone remember what happened in 2008 with Lehman Brothers and Washington Mutual? Not many people realize what happened. Lehman Brothers and Washington Mutual were very large banks. I believe Washington Mutual was out in Washington. In a matter of a couple days, I think it was 5 or 6 days, $320 billion were withdrawn. Because people saw, oh my gosh, this bank's going to collapse. So what do? They want their money. They either moved it out into different things. So, and the government saw this, and they realized that this was going to cause a panic nationwide. So what, FDIC, does anyone know what that is? Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And you go to the bank, there's always FDIC everywhere saying, hey, your account's insured up to $250,000. Does anyone remember what it was before 2008? It was $100,000. Well, this panic with Lehman Brothers and Washington Mutual, they realized if they don't do something, it's going to collapse the entire system. So they bumped that up, said, hey, well, we are going to insure your accounts up to $250,000. Oh, okay, that's good. Granted, the FDIC has no money. They don't, and it's if they need to insure, yep, they'll just print more. Which will make exact. You know exactly what we're talking about. So, in Russia, January 28th, one of Russia's top 200 lenders, My Bank, that's the name of it, introduces a one-week complete ban on cash withdrawals. Do you think that could happen here? Yeah. Absolutely. So what if this happens? How can I prepare my family if this happens? What if you go to the bank and they say, oh, we're only going to let you have $100, but I need $1,000 because I need to buy food and, you know, well, this is all you can have. Or we're closed for the next 2 weeks. Okay, so what if? How are you going to prepare for that? Cash reserves, cash on hand. Okay. Power grid failure, natural disaster. August 14th of 2003 at 4:10 p.m. Does anyone remember what happened? Yep. You see the picture right up here? See that black area? That was a blackout. It lasted for 2 or 3 days. I lived in Grand Blanc, and I was about 2 miles from the line where they had at Grand Blanc had power through that whole thing. Could you imagine being in New York City? Or could you imagine being 1,000 miles away from home if that happens? What are you going to do? Credit cards don't work. Okay, and that only lasted for a couple days. They got it fixed quickly. But what would happen if it lasted for a month? Or longer? I've heard stories about people saying that our power grid is not the greatest, and this could happen again. So you have to think, okay, what would that happen? What would happen? Would my family be prepared for that financially? Hurricane Katrina, tornadoes. Back to the power outage. Did anyone lose power this past winter for a couple days? Okay. How many didn't have a generator before? How many have a generator now? It was a big job for consumers to fix that. What happened? What if it was a bigger power outage for longer? Financially, do you have enough? Are you prepared? So, and before I started learning all this, I personally wasn't. Luckily, I married a wonderful woman that got my brain straightened out. So, all right, the next thing, another problem we face is inflation. Like I said, prices of things we buy going up. We went out to eat. Actually, we went bowling this Friday, and I couldn't believe how much they charge for bowling nowadays. But in my opinion, this is enemy number one that we face. And there, I could probably talk 8 to 10 hours on this subject alone, because as I was doing research for this talk, what I was reading is just amazing what's going on in the banking industry right now. Okay? Let's see here. What is inflation? As the money supply increases, prices of goods and services eventually increase. A lot of people think, and I used to think, that inflation is rising prices. Well, okay, it is, but what causes that? An increase in the money supply eventually causes prices to go up. For example, I have this pen here, and this is a very valuable pen, and we all want this pen in this room. I'm going to auction it off. And we all have $100 in our pocket. What's the most I'm going to sell this pen for? $100. Now, Mitch over there has got a checkbook that he can write checks out, and he gives each one of us $1 million check. What's going to happen to the price of this pen? It's going to obviously go up because it's something we all want. We all have more money, so it's going to go up. That's a very simple explanation of inflation. Like I said, very simple. So you can't really see this. Just some examples of inflation. This is Germany, the Weimar Republic. In 1919, this chart shows, in 1919 it cost us 170 German marks, which is their dollar, to buy 1 ounce of gold. Okay? They inflated their money supply so much, a couple years later, it cost 87 trillion marks to buy 1 ounce of gold. Did that 1 ounce of gold become worth $87 trillion? They inflated their money because through the war, and they needed to pay. So they inflated their money. That's an example of inflation. And as you can see here, gotta love political cartoons. This is from a newspaper back then. That's Gutenberg and the Gutenberg Press, and he's holding his Bible right there. And that's the German marks just being printed out. Has everyone seen the picture of the people throwing the money into the furnace to burn it? Or the people just throwing the money away? Because it was so useless and worthless, it was better to burn it and create heat than to go spend it. So another example of inflation is Zimbabwe. This happened recently in 2009. They inflated their money supply so much. As you can see here, there's a $100 trillion bill. I actually have here, I ordered off of Amazon, it cost me $1.68, a $50 trillion in my hand right here. This is real currency that was used in Zimbabwe. And as you can see here, you got $100 billion, and you can buy 3 eggs with it.
Three eggs
for $100 billion. But that goes to show you what happens when you have an out-of-control government that likes to print money because they need to pay debts. So
I just wanted to mention, you're talking about these things that can happen through inflation. I don't know if anybody here knows it other than wherever he is, Don.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He brings up a good point. This was one of the major causes. Edward Gibbons, I believe, wrote a book in the 1700s called The Rise and the Fall of the Roman Empire. It's multiple volumes. I have not read it. I don't think my vocabulary can handle that book. But there's 6 reasons why it fell, and we're keeping right up with them. And like you said, one of them was their inflation of the currency. Okay. Thanks for that. Okay, what causes this? What causes inflation? Well, we can thank the Federal Reserve. Does anyone know what the Federal Reserve is? Okay.
Yes, that's the one that backs the money.
Yep. If you take a dollar out of your wallet, on the top of it, you'll see something that'll say Federal Reserve Note. This is basically a promise, an IOU, saying, hey, this is worth a dollar. Or, you know, 10, 50, 100, whatever. All right, and this is the greatest threat, in my opinion, that we face today, is the Fed. Okay. There is a ton of information on the Federal Reserve. There's conspiracy theories aplenty. If you're a conspiracy theory person, you can read all sorts of stuff. Some is true, some is not. But here's a basic overview of what I have learned. So what is it? I'm going to read this definition here. The Federal Reserve is a private bank owned by 5 European and 3 U.S. banks that since 1913 has charged us money, about $2 billion per year, to issue money which is loaned to our government at an interest rate that it determines. It's got a checkbook that it writes checks and withdraws money out of an account that doesn't really exist. It prints its money. Who created it? Another thing I have here. It is not federal. It's not a government entity, and there's no reserves. So who actually created this? Well, the panic of 1907, I guess I'm still reading up on this. There was a large panic where people went to the bank and they couldn't get their money. So when a panic happens, what do people say? They go to the government and say, hey, you need to do something. Help us. So in 1910 on Jekyll Island, Georgia, the creature from Jekyll Island was born. This is, it's getting kind of famous. There was a secret meeting of a couple senators and some bankers. They said, how can we control the money? And they created the Federal Reserve in 1913. And in 1913, they passed the Federal Reserve Act, which gave us our third Federal Reserve Bank. It didn't work 2 times before. Has anyone heard it's not worth a continental? Well, what that means, I didn't really realize it, but then I looked into it. During the Revolutionary War, they had to pay their war debts. What do? Let's print some money, called the Continental. They printed so much of it, it ended up being not worth a Continental. So, let's see here. Who created it? Who actually owns the Federal Reserve? Now, this right here is where it gets kind of foggy. No one really knows. Like I said, there's 8 people. Goldman Sachs of New York, Rockefeller Brothers of New York, Lehman Brothers of New York before they went under, Rothschilds of London and Berlin, Lazard Brothers of Paris, Kuhn Loeb and Company of Germany and New York City, Israel Moses Seif of Italy, and Warburg and Company of Germany and Amsterdam. So foreign banks and American banks control our money. All sorts of trouble there. So what has the Fed actually been up to? I'm going to start in 2008. Has anyone heard the term, thanks Don, QE, quantitative easing? Quantitative easing is basically the Fed printing money. In 2008, George Bush initiated purchases of $500 billion in mortgage-backed securities and dropped interest rates to nearly zero, which means the Fed bought $500 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities, and that was to resolve the housing crisis. It didn't work. So if that didn't work, let's try it again. In 2010, of November 2010 through June of 2011, the Fed purchased $600 billion of treasury bonds to spur the economy, but most of it went to foreign banks. That didn't work. So let's try it again. QE3. In the fall of 2012, the Fed began purchasing mortgage-backed securities and treasury bonds at the rate of $85 billion per month. Boom, boom, boom. And everyone wonders why everything we buy is increasing in price. They keep pumping money in. That didn't work. So QE4, also known as QE Infinity, is they're going to continue pumping billions per month into the economy. And I could go into the Fed and their meetings they have if they're going to ease, and I won't bore you with that, but if you want to learn more, I can point you in the right direction. So what has this done to the U.S. economy? This chart right here describes what's happened to our dollar because of the Federal Reserve. On the left, you have 1900. On the right, you have up to 2005. That is our purchasing power of our U.S. dollar. Over the past 100 years, because the Federal Reserve is 100 years old last year, we have lost 98% purchasing power of our money. So that is what money printing will get you. So, in fact, actually, has anyone ever seen a silver certificate?
Not a long time.
I first saw this at a coin shop. It's like, why are they selling a dollar bill for $5? Like that's, and then I looked at it. In silver, payable to the bearer on demand. Mm-hmm. Our money used to be backed by real things. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. It makes it kind of difficult to pay for all of our exploits in this country with money that's backed, but I won't get into that. All right. So, I don't mean to depress, or I just wanted you guys to think. I just want you to think. So what do? Proverbs 11:14, where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. Educate yourself. Who are you listening to? There's a lot of people that are talking about finances. Susie Orman, she's got good things and bad things. Dave Ramsey, I think his Get Out of Debt program is the best on the market right now, is one of the best. CNBC, you turn on CNBC, CNN, Fox News, all these people that are in there talking, debating, and what's going on. So, I think it was Walt Disney that says, if you want to be successful, look at what everyone's doing and do the exact opposite. I've described myself as a contrarian investor. I look at what everyone's doing and do the opposite, because that usually works out pretty good. Do your own research and read. If you want to learn about this, there's many good books about this. Find a mentor. Find a like-minded group of people, and you can learn and you can grow. So here are basically 11 principles that I've used, and my wife and I have used to get, to prepare ourselves and just to get ourselves on good footing, in good standing. Ignorance is the greatest danger. Ignorance isn't a bad thing. I'm ignorant on a lot of things. It's not a bad. It's just a chance to go out and learn. Educate yourself. Read, listen, associate, learn. Don't take their word for it. Always question. Educate yourself. an investment in your mind, you can never lose that. No matter what happens in the world, you know, financially, if you invest in your mind, like I went to college and I learned, that investment in my mind is there. Every book I read about economics, marriage, or whatever is in there. Understand the history of our country and how it operates. This is one thing that I have to get better at, I'll admit. There is so much, there's so many different versions of history out there. It's when I really started doing my own research and reading and looking up for myself, a lot of the stuff I'm learning is a lot different than what I was taught in high school. And then I could go down that road, but I won't. But just learn and grow. Learn the basics of business, financial management, and economics. How does a business run? You know, if you have a job, how does my boss pay me? Get to learn. Revenue, profit, expenses. Learn business. Financial management, you know, how you manage your personal finances. Economics, how does the economic environment in this country affect my checkbook? You know, get to learn that. Getting more personal, create a budget. Write down everything you spend. This can be a big eye-opener. It's amazing. When I did this a couple years ago, I need to do it again. But it's just amazing of what you can spend money on, and you don't know where it goes. I had $100 in my pocket. Where'd it go? I don't know. So, 6 months of cash, 6 months of savings in cash. I call it my uh-oh fund. Uh-oh, I lost my job. Uh-oh, I broke my leg and I can't work. There could be another a bunch of things. Get out of debt. Like I said, a lot could be said. There's many good plans out there. The rich rules over the poor and the borrower is servant to the lender. I think that sums it up pretty good. Like I said, before I got married, I was in a lot of debt. And I constantly thought of that. Constantly. Didn't stop me from going out and getting deeper in debt. But I constantly thought about that. And I was a slave to that. So, start learning entrepreneurship and increasing your skills. Start a business. If you have a job, you have a good job that you enjoy, get better. You know, you don't necessarily need to go back to college. Learn. Leadership. You know, how can I be more of a blessing? How can I add value to my company? How can I increase my value to this company? By reading books. Finding a mentor. Community is essential. I know Pastor has talked about community a lot. This is a perfect example of a community. A group of like-minded people that we can share and help each other. If one of us falls down, you know, we're all going to help. Financially, if one of us falls down, okay, you need help? Okay, let's lend a hand. Active in local government. Washington is messed up. Everyone agree? Both sides. I mean, I've turned off all the political jargon. It's just, I can't take it anymore. Start locally, your township, and you can affect change locally that will directly affect you. Invest in yourself first, and then invest in things that shine in hard times, metals, agricultural energy. Invest in yourself, like I said, an investment in your brain can never be taken. You know, no matter what happens. So, I actually heard it said if they were talking to Bill Gates or Michael Dell, and he said, what would happen if you lost everything today? He says, well, I'd make twice as much, twice as fast, because he's got his thinking set. So if you invest in your brain, they can never take that from you. All right. Investment hierarchy. This right here has probably been one of the biggest changes in, you know, it's been the greatest help to my wife and I. Yourself first. Emergency fund, 3 to 6 months of living. Your uh-oh fund. Uh-oh, that's not good. Where are we going to get money for this? Survival preparation. I know pastors brought in some guests talking about food. Worst case scenario, your cash in the safe. metals, silver and gold to hedge against inflation. Food storage, guns and ammo. Don't be fanatical. You know, you don't want to, like, I don't know if anyone's seen that show Preppers on TV, but don't get too crazy, but don't ignore it either. You want to own real things, real tangible things. If you can't touch it, you don't own it. My personal strategy is that I have this little saying is guns, gold, and things you can hold. That's my personal strategy. Savings, long-term and targeted. You want to have savings, cash on hand, whether you're saving for a new car or saving for something for the house. And these next three things, CDs, stock market, speculative ventures, I won't talk about. Well, I would say just warning, research, don't do anything. If there's one thing I've learned with investments, there's always another good investment. Never make an emotional decision when it comes to money, trust me. Oh, I've got to do it now because this guy said it's this. Okay, if it's that good, there'll be another one 6 months from now. So there's always the next greatest thing. So, but I won't get too much in investing. There's trained professionals out there that know that. So, gold and silver, what to buy? You buy, I'm not going to get too far in depth. I have some resources here, some CDs if you want to listen to some articles. You want to buy for the bullion. In here, this is a 1 ounce gold piece. It's 1 ounce of gold. It's actually, this thing's worth $1,300 right here. So, yeah, don't. So, just some other examples. You know, silver. Here's a 10-ounce silver bar. Like, before I got into the buying this, I didn't know. How do you buy silver? I don't know. Do you get it in a bag? Or so you can buy it in, like, 10-ounce bars. Does anyone know what happened to our coins in 1965? Yep, they took all the silver out of them. So pre-1964 coins, this dime is actually worth $1.19 right now. Let's see, this war nickel is worth about a dollar. Let's see here, this Morgan silver dollar is worth $16. I mean, it says $1 on it, but it's worth $16. Why? Because of silver content.
What happens if you can't get anybody to give you that kind of money? You said it's worth $68, but everybody's...
That's true. You have a good point. I'll talk about that. Okay. Yep. He actually brought up an interesting point. You know, what happens if, okay, I can't get any, if a disaster happens and I can't get anyone to give me that much money for it? That's something, nothing's perfect in this world. It's an investment. Look at buying precious metals as storing fruit. Do not buy precious metals to make money. If I buy it for this, it's going to go up. And I'll sell it and I'll make money. That's the wrong thinking. Look at it as you work hard for your money. You're the fruits of your labor. And you want to keep that away from effects of fiat currency. So you want to freeze it. Okay? You buy precious metals. That is not, you know, it's not affected negatively by a fiat money, which is the money that's printed by the Federal Reserve. Okay? I hope this is making sense. Numismatics. Numismatics is the coin collectors. Bullion is for business. Numismatics is for fun. A lot of dealers out there will try and sell you these valuable coins. Oh, it was printed. It was a rare coin. And da-da-da-da-da. If that's your hobby, more power to you. But if you're looking just to buy gold and silver, stay away from it. Because there's so many variables out there. One lady just found a coin. It was just a simple coin. It's worth $1 million. If she would have taken it to a pawn shop, they would have given her probably $500 for it. But that's where the numismatics comes in. Where do you buy it? Dealers, coin shops, pawn shops, and internet. I have little stars by the pawn shops and internet. There's a lot of scammers out there. Be careful. Be careful. Do your research. Know your dealer. How do you store it? Somewhere safe. In a safe, in your house, safety deposit box, in a bank. Warning, like I said, be careful. There are a lot of people that will try and get you to spend money on things that you should not be spending money on. Oh, you buy this coin, it's great, because back in 1934, the federal government made it illegal to own gold. I can't remember the name of the act, but in 1934, everyone had to turn in their gold.
That's when we went off the gold.
You went off the gold standard, yep. So they'll say, well, if you buy this, they can't confiscate it. So the government can do whatever they want. If they want it, they'll get it. So, other investment options. I'm not really going to talk too much about this. Firearms, antiques, firearms, real estate that produces cash flow, rentals. I know a couple people here have rental properties. They produce cash flow. Cash flow is king. Farmland, agriculture, items that people want. And that's such a broad subject. So, okay, final thoughts. I know this sounds a bit weird, but it's just money. It really is just money. It shouldn't be an obsession. It used to be an obsession for me, but it's really just money. This community is not going to let anyone starve. If someone's hurting, we're going to help. It's all God's anyways. We're just stewards of it. I don't know. This is all, when I die, none of this matters. I mean, I'm going to pass it on to my children. But and when they die, it's all going to burn up anyways. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Everything that has happened and will happen is right there. Thankfully, I've never had anything horrible in my life happen where my faith was tested on that, but my hope is in that scripture right there. So, and who knows what will happen next? I don't know what the next big thing is. A currency, I don't know. It could be a number of things. But you can prepare here. There's things you can do. You can learn. I have resources I can share with you. But we'll receive eternal security through Christ. That's really the only thing that matters. It's money is nice. Money is very important. It's up there with oxygen. We got to have it in this day and age. But when you die, Steve Jobs, when he died, he said three times, he said, oh my, oh my, oh my. I don't know what he saw, but he was worth $5 billion. He had multiple jets. But when he's dead. So, all right. Well, I kind of threw a ton of information that took me 6 years to learn in 40 minutes. We have no time for questions, unfortunately. I have resources here if you're interested, articles. If you want to, I can answer questions. In the future, if I spark some interest or if some confusion, please come to me. Pastor, did you want to close out?
Yeah, let's just go ahead and go down.